which means that you and I will next meet on the front porch on Friday. And we will get back to business. Again, many thanks this evening to you all. Thanks, as ever, to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, to John Fox, to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. White Rose Society, since 2002, literally saving liberal radio and doing it via the Internet. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Pardon us if we forego our normal opening of the show today. It's bouncy and upbeat, and somehow it just doesn't feel right today. So we thought we'd stick with something a little softer and a little more appropriate today on this sad day, second day of the coverage of events of the death of the great Senator Edward M. Kennedy. I notice on the TV monitor we have here in the studio, there's now a procession from Hyannisport on the way into Boston, where the senator will lie in repose at the JFK Library. Many people have asked, why not the Capitol building? I don't know what the protocol for that is, but Senator Kennedy is a man of Boston. He is much loved in the state of Massachusetts and Boston in that area. And I think it's entirely fitting for him to be where he is. It's also entirely fitting for him to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery with his two brothers. One struck down in his youth as President of the United States. Those of you old enough, we all remember that day, of course. And then I, like most of you, remember exactly where I was that day, and I also remember exactly where I was the day that Bobby was killed late at night here on the East Coast. Actually, I wasn't on the coast. I was in Ohio. And so here we have the natural death of Edward M. Kennedy. Outlived all of his brothers, outlived all of his siblings but one, Jean, and we saw her in that sad procession of people today watching the casket being loaded into the hearse for that last ride of Edward M. Kennedy to Boston, where he will lie in repose at his mother's church and the church that he has attended for quite some time as well. He, as I mentioned, will be buried in Arlington National Cemetery, not very far from brothers John and Bobby. And I think that is appropriate after serving 46 years in the United States Senate with distinguished service. A man with the highest credentials. Many people around the world adored Ted Kennedy, and of course many people, as we're finding out now, hated him. And I don't want to dwell on that, but we're seeing right now what the right really is made of. We're seeing the hatred. We're seeing it in print. We're seeing it on TV. We're hearing it in radio. We're hearing the hatred. These people are psychotic, evidently. There's a lot of politicians on the right that I have never liked. I, for one, abhorred the policies of one Ronald Reagan, but I wasn't about to hate him. Always thought he was a good old guy, maybe he'd be a good neighbor, I don't know. But the hatred that pours forth from the right shows that there are many people unbalanced on that side of the aisle, and I guess we'll just leave it at that today. One thing I do want to mention, that Senator Jeff Sessions, who's adored in the South, was asked for comment today on the death of Senator Edward M. Kennedy, and Sessions, in his typical manner, said no comment. Can you imagine saying no comment about the death of a man who served in the United States Senate for 46 years? Can you imagine saying that? Can you imagine being enough of an ass like Senator Jeff Sessions to say that? It just makes Sessions look smaller than he already looked, I guess. Hard to believe that a United States Senator would act that way, but then it is Jeff Sessions after all. I would like to remind all of you today, if you have a chance, to go back and we talked at great length yesterday about the accomplishments of Senator Kennedy, and the bills he put through Congress are prolific. There are many. And things that were needed. And one thing I don't understand why every woman in the United States doesn't feel indebted to Teddy Kennedy, because he was a champion for women's rights and many, many legislative issues pertaining to helping the ladies. But we talked about so many domestic things that he passed yesterday, and yet the man was a genius on international matters as well. Back in the late 70s, early 80s, many times when the Russians invited him, the Soviets invited him to come to Moscow, and he did. He went and met with I believe it was Brezhnev at the time, because they figured Ted was going to be president someday, and they wanted to get in good with him. But that was the esteem with which he was held around the world and other countries besides ours. And he was an expert on foreign policy as well, although the depth of his political acumen really was here in this country on domestic issues. And to highlight what I'm talking about, all of you, of course, are listening today on a computer. I would like you to use your old Google today, or your Yahoo, or whatever search engine that you use. And I would like for you to Google Ted Kennedy's September 27th, 2002 anti-war speech. And you'll see what I'm talking about. Ted gave that speech warning about what the war in Iraq might bring, warning of the consequences of that war, warning us to stay out of it, warning us not to get our nose bloodied in a conflict where we had no business getting involved. And as it turns out, of course, the administration at that time turned a blind eye to him and to everybody else who warned of terrible consequences for this country in lives, in blood, in treasure. And it turns out that Ted Kennedy's speech of September 27, 2002 was prophetic, not pathetic. It was prophetic. It was right spot on. Everything he warned about has come true. All the terrible consequences he predicted from that war, would we enter it at that time, have come true. So once again, he showed that he was a wise statesman, and he was ignored, and people at the time, and still today, call him names and disparage his good name because he argued against the war. I heard right-wingers yesterday say that Senator Kennedy should not be buried in Arlington National Cemetery because he was against our military. Nothing could be further from the truth. Ted Kennedy was never, never against our military. He was against war. He was against war that need not have been fought. He was against a war where 4,300 and I think 31 soldiers have died in Iraq now. He was against that because he knew it was wrong. And history has borne his ideas out. It was wrong. No one can deny that now. We have gained nothing from a war in Iraq. We have lost 4,300 and at least 31 American soldiers, men and women, in Iraq for absolutely nothing. Nothing. Ted Kennedy predicted that. He was exactly spot on with his prediction. Would he have made a good president? Absolutely. I know he would have been a great president. But he saw his mission to be in the United States Senate after he lost in the 1980 election, primary. He saw his mission in the Senate, and it turned out that that was a wise decision because he is now recognized, and I hear that they're thinking about putting his picture up with Calhoun and the other four in the Senate reception room, the beautiful, ornate Senate reception room. If you ever get a chance to get in there and take a look around, it is magnificent. But they're talking about putting his portrait up with the others, with the four others. And I think it'd be highly appropriate. What I was getting at, those who once again disparaged his name and talked about how he was anti-military, Ted Kennedy went to the funeral of every fallen soldier from Massachusetts who's come home from that war, either in Massachusetts or at Arlington. He attended every one of them. Every one. How many United States senators can say that they've done the same thing? Maybe there are others. I don't know. But he loved the military. He loved the military personnel, and he worked hard for the military personnel to make sure that they got what they needed, to make sure that they got the right protection they needed when they went into battle, the right pay, the right housing, the right benefits. Ted Kennedy worked for all that. So don't be a damn liar and say he was against the military. Nothing could be further from the truth. But he did attend every Massachusetts soldier funeral coming home, and that's a tribute to him. Who will be his successor? There will be an interim successor, I imagine, I'm guessing by next week. I'm guessing it won't take the Massachusetts legislature very long to pick a successor for him, an interim, to fill the interim period until the next election. Marty Meehan has been mentioned. He's the president of a university up there right now. He would be an excellent choice. I've heard those mentioned that Vicky, his wife Vicky, his second wife Vicky, would be a good choice for senator, and I agree. Many have explained that they have not seen Ted in the last, 19 years they've been married, without her being there at his side or nearby. She was consulted on everything he did. She was a close confidant. They were truly soulmates. Ted said he'd be lost without her, and she was in on many decisions. Not that she made the decisions, but Ted would often consult with her. So, and that's happened before. You look at, the Bono gal. When Hale Boggs died, Cokie Roberts' dad, Hale Boggs, his wife Lindy ended up taking and getting his position. This happened many times throughout political history here in the United States, so that would not be so strange. And to be sure, Vicky is not uninitiated or uninformed about political matters in this country, having been at Ted's side for the last 19 years. So that may well be a good choice for her to fill his spot until the next election. Time will tell what it will be. I do want to tell everybody that we're going to have the honor of having Governor Howard Dean on with us this afternoon. He'll be along with us in the second hour. I don't know where he is right now, but he's going to call in from wherever it is he's at right now. He's one busy guy. As you've noticed, he's been having appearances on TV almost every night, on radio all day, every day, been out promoting the health care issues that we all want and need. I shouldn't say we all, that most of us say we want and need. Some 77% of the people here in the United States now saying we do need some sort of a public option in this health care bill, if we get a health care bill. 77%. And so Governor Dean will be along with us coming up in the second hour. We had this discussion when we were at the Netroots Nation, Bob and I and Matt and some others had this discussion on how should we address Governor Dean? Usually it's the highest office that someone holds that you address them by the rest of their lives, but is anything higher than doctor? Some call him Dr. Dean, some call him Governor Dean, and some still call him Chairman Dean. So we'll just call him Governor Dean today, okay? But he's going to be along with us, and we've tried for a long time to get him on the program. We often speak to Jim, his brother, and at the folks in his office up in Vermont, and many times they've said, "Well, we'll get him on the show," and for one reason or another, and I understand he's been busy, couldn't make it, and they're always going to go where they get the most viewers. That's how it works out, and you have to understand where you're at in the pecking order. And, if MSNBC wants him on in competition with us, well, they're going to get him. And that's how it is, and that's how we understand it to be. So that's something to look forward to coming up in the second hour. I see Senator Kennedy's motorcade is on its way to Boston. I guess it was about a 70-mile trip from Hyannisport to Boston, to the church. And they're going to take a kind of a historic ride through parts of Boston, parts where he lived when he was young and places that he frequented in his church and around before he finally goes to the JFK Library in Boston. 866-546-5254 if you'd like to join us here in the program. 866-546-5254. You're most welcome to call. And if you want to put it on your nickel, if you've got one of those phone plans like Vonage or something, want to call us, 304-574-7813. 304-574-7813. We are coming to you live today from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida on this, another day of sadness. And today or tomorrow sometime, I guess they're going to have a ceremony, a public mass of some kind or a public program where they get together and celebrate his life, and there'll be some humorous things, great stories that are told. You know, there's nothing like sitting with people in Washington, in this case Boston, and hearing old political stories. I love it. I remember one special dinner one night with a couple of important politicos, and I just they started telling stories, and I just kind of pushed myself back from the table a little bit and listened all evening. I was fascinated by their conversation, and I'm not easily fascinated, believe me. So we'll cover the time. We'll take your calls. We do have Dr. Dean on this afternoon coming up at 4:30, wherever he's at. He's going to be calling in. And I want to talk to you. A friend of mine sent me this, one of my cyber friends, talking about Ted Kennedy. And I know many of you watched the tremendous tributes that were on last night. They were difficult to watch. Some of those things, you know, I can't decide whether to watch them or not. They are interesting and they are fascinating, and yet it's such an oh-so-sad time. And we shouldn't be so sad, I guess, for a man 77 years old, and we knew he was going to pass soon. And what he died of is not all that uncommon. And it's not like we should be shocked, and it's not like we should say, oh, my God, you know, the man was... No, he was 77 years old, and my wife is Greek, you know, and they have a saying that I just absolutely adore amongst the Greeks. When some elderly person dies and has had a good life, they say that he got all of his loaves of bread. And I think Ted Kennedy did get all of his loaves of bread in his life. Yes, he had many tragedies, outliving all but one of his siblings. That is a very tragic thing right there. My father is from a family of 14, and I had one uncle that survived them all, and he lived in sorrow the remaining couple of years of his life, knowing that he was the last one left. And so I know that Ted must have felt the same way, mourning the loss of his brothers. If you've never been in the office of Ted Kennedy in the Senate building, and Bob and I were there not so long ago, Bob Kincaid, my great colleague, we went in and took pictures and stood around, and it was, the walls were filled with pictures of his family and friends and of his brothers, and it's just a wonderful sight. A wonderful sight, and I hope some of you listening have had the opportunity to go there and meet Ted Kennedy and see his office and understand the history that you're standing in right there. Across the hall, nearly across the hall, adjacent, was where John Kennedy's office was when he was in the United States Senate. There's a plaque on the wall there. It's just around the corner, a little bit from the huge Senate hearing room where they had the Titanic hearings and many of the special hearings they've had over the years. You know, every night when you see them interviewed, when you see senators being interviewed with those columns in the background, standing in that looks like a stairwell almost, when you see that, that's where they get interviewed most of the time. Well, usually just down the hall from that, maybe 20 yards is where Senator Kennedy's office complex was, and the Senate office building. His name was Kennedy, and that name brings forth many emotions in this country. There are some people that adored the Kennedy family. I am one of those. I will say that without reservation. John F. Kennedy is the reason I got involved in politics. My first foray into politics was with John F. Kennedy. I did see, when I was a youngster, my father took me to see Eisenhower, came through on a whistle stop in Marion, Ohio. And we did visit, and I think I've mentioned before, we did visit and meet Harry Truman. And I got to see John F. Kennedy on a whistle stop in Mansfield, Ohio, when I was, what, 15 years old. And I don't know, my love of politics grew from that. And there have been times in my life when I've kind of let it go to the background and other times when I've let it come to the forefront. And it's something that I'm extremely interested in. And the Kennedy family, I guess, is what started that great interest, the Camelot experience. I really did believe when I was a young man, and I'm droning on here, but I really did believe when I was a young man that there could easily have been a succession of 8 years of Jack Kennedy, 8 years of Bobby Kennedy, and then 8 years of Ted Kennedy. As a young man, I had it all planned out. Well, history kept my dream of that from coming true. So easily, Bobby could have made it to the White House. Bobby, probably the most, probably the most serene and probably maybe the most deep, thoughtful one of the three. Ted, a little more willing to take a chance. But a friend of mine said this to me, what if his name were Edward Moore? His initials are, of course, Edward M. Kennedy, the middle name standing for Moore. What if his name was just Edward Moore? If his name were Edward Moore, he would not have served so long, if he'd served at all. And he might not have served with more than 350 other senators. Imagine that. He served with 350 different senators. If his name were Edward Moore, he would not have served with all three men, Everett Dirksen, Richard Russell, and Philip Hart, after whom the Senate office buildings are named. He would not have had his first real fight over the poll tax and his most recent one over going to war in Iraq. None of this would have happened if his name were Edward Moore. This piece written by Charles Pierce in the Boston Globe. If his name were Edward Moore, Robert Bork most assuredly would be on the Supreme Court today. Robert Dole might have been elected President of the United States, and there might still be a draft if his name were Edward Moore. There would not have been the Civil Rights Act of 1991, which overturned 7 Supreme Court decisions that Kennedy saw as rolling back the gains of the civil rights movement. The 1990 American with Disabilities Act, the most wide-ranging civil rights bill since the original ones in the 60s. The Kennedy-Kassenbaum Bill of 1996, which allows portability in health care coverage. Or any one of the 35 other initiatives, large and small, on everything from Medicare to the minimum wage to immigration reform, that Kennedy, in opposition and in the minority, managed to cajole and finesse through the Senate between 1996 and 1998, masterfully defusing the Gingrich Revolution and maneuvering Dole into such complete political incoherence that Bill Clinton won the election in a walk. None of this would have happened if his name were Edward Moore. 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us, please do. We look forward to hearing from you today, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Just imagine if the health insurance lobby took the $1.4 million a day that we're spending to fight health care reform and spent that money lowering patient cost. Just imagine if the drug companies spent the $120 million they're about to spend on advertising to fight health care reform, and they spent that money making life-saving drugs more affordable. Just imagine an American healthcare system that wasn't run by huge profit-making companies wasting millions of dollars on lobbying and ads and CEO pay. Can you imagine? Because that's what healthcare reform looks like. This message created by Lee Stranahan. I'm an uninsured father taking on the health insurance industry.
Inside these empty walls.
Guy James here with you on the Guy James Show. Thank you for joining us today on the Head On Radio Network. We're awfully glad to have all of you along with us today. Kind of a melancholy day for many of us who loved and respected the late Senator Edward M. Kennedy. Gone at the age of 77 from brain cancer. Look, let me be honest with you. I seldom mourn the death of anybody that's, you know, that age. And I do say, well, if you've reached 77, I guess that's not that old anymore, but, well, at 77, you've had a good long life. And although Ted had tragedy in his life, he had triumph as well. And I guess that's as much as any of us can expect. We can't expect to go through life unscathed by tragedy. Very few of us make it few without having terrible things happen along the way, but hopefully we have some wonderful things happen along the way to kind of balance things out, and I think he did. Although I'm not so sure having these two brothers killed in the manner that they were, you can never balance things out. But you know why I'm sad, and I want to be perfectly honest with you. The reason I'm so very sad today is for selfish reasons. I'm so very sad today because I feel a part of America died today, died yesterday. And what I mean by that is that the ideals, the ideas that he stood for in helping those that were disadvantaged and the lesser amongst us in their, not actually lesser, but because of their means, the ideals he stood for in helping those people may be gone. I don't see anybody else picking up that baton and running with it. This might be a part of American politics that's gone, and it might have died with Senator Kennedy. I hope not. I hope the love and compassion that he had for his constituents, for those in need, for the elderly, for the immigrants, for the sick, for the disadvantaged, I hope the love for those people will survive in other politicians. Oh, I do hope it will. Let's, I thought we had a call there, but I guess we don't. I just only can hope that somebody will pick that up and run with it. I don't know who right now. Do you know who? Do you have any ideas who? If you do, give us a call. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I know one it will not be. It will not be Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. Brian Butler sent this to me. He says, speaking before what was described as a friendly crowd at the Monroe Chamber of Commerce yesterday, that's Monroe, Louisiana, Senator Mary Landrieu said she was opposed to much of the Democrats' legislative agenda. Asked under what circumstances she would support a public option, Landrieu responded, very few, if any. I'd prefer a private market-based approach to any health care reform that would extend coverage, according to the Monroe News Star. To go on quoting her, she said, I'd like to cover everyone. That would be the moral thing to do, but it would be immoral to bankrupt the country while doing so, Landrieu said. The public option, as currently conceived, is expected to be a deficit reducer. Landrieu also said she'd continue her long history of opposition to a cap-and-trade system to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And I quote, I'm not supporting that approach, but I'm open to hear modifications, she said. Landrieu has also balked at the idea that she and other Democrats should be expected to oppose filibusters as a procedural matter. I'm going to keep an open mind, but I'm not committing to any procedural straitjackets one way or another, she said. This article ends with the statement, with Democrats like these, who needs Republicans? Harry Reid is doing a hell of a job as Senate Majority Leader. Mary, you're another one. Why don't you just jump now? Nothing irritates me more than a Mary Landrieu who gets elected as a Democrat in a blue dog area and then behaves exactly like a Republican. God, I hate that. If you'd like to join us here on the program today, 866-546-5254. I wouldn't be surprised some of these days soon to see Mary Landrieu jump. She can get elected as a Republican where she lives. Now that New Orleans has changed so much, and you know what I'm saying, and a lot of people are happy about it. I'm not. But politicians, Republican politicians, are quite happy with the way things have turned out in New Orleans. Blue dogs. For a long time, I've been thinking we shouldn't call them blue dogs anymore. You think about blue dogs, and you think like a little stuffed animal or something, and it's all cute and cuddly and all that. I can think of a lot of different names for blue dogs. Democrats in name only. Hypocrites. Obstructionists. Turncoats. And some other names that are not quite so kind. That's what I can think of about blue dogs. As certainly being obstructionist at this time. Sophie says on the internet, Republicrats. Yeah, that's a good one. If she does not stand up to procedurally break a filibuster by Republicans on this health care issue, there will be side effects, let me say. I would be outraged if any Democrat didn't stand up and break a filibuster by the Republicans on this. I don't know what we're going to do without a Ted Kennedy and people like him to get in the Senate and in the House of Representatives and learn the art of compromise. Sometimes compromise isn't good, but without some compromise, there would be precious little, if any, legislation passed today. And Ted Kennedy was the master of that, as we all know. Let's face it, if you can work hand-in-hand with Orrin Hatch, you can work with anybody. That's a fact. But somebody's going to have to jump in there and take the reins, and I don't know. Just don't know who it might be. I really don't know. Certainly not any of these blue dogs. We had a key House liberal suggesting today that party moderates who push for changes in health care legislation are brain dead. Well, thank you. And they're out for insurance company campaign donations. Moderate blue dog Democrats just want to cause trouble, said Representative Pete Stark, Democrat of California, who heads the Health Subcommittee on the Tax Writing Ways and Means Committee. He said they're for the most part, and I hate to say, brain dead. Right on, Pete, right on. But they're just looking to raise money from the insurance companies and promote a right-wing agenda that is not really very useful in this whole process, Stark told reporters on a conference call. A spokeswoman for the Blue Dog Caucus did not immediately respond to an email request for comment. Well, I'm not surprised at that, are you? I see that they're hammering away with the propaganda and hypocrisy as hard as ever. They're not going to let up. They're not ever going to let up. This isn't about health care, ladies and gentlemen. I think you all know that. This is about breaking the political back of one Barack Hussein Obama. That is what this is about. I would venture to say that many, many, many of these Republicans who are voting against the health care program, many, like Inhofe from Oklahoma, he should have an I after his name instead of an R, an I for idiot. Him and Coburn, are there any more two dumb sons of bitches in the United States Senate than those two? What is wrong with the people of Oklahoma, Inhofe and Coburn? Can you think of two more idiot freaking morons in the United States Senate or the House of Representatives as utterly ridiculous and stupid as those two? And one of them's a doctor. Oh, my God, I pity the people that ever went to Coburn. I don't know. But these people are intent upon just breaking the back of Barack Obama politically so that they can get the power back. That's all this is about. They know health care for America would be a good idea. They know there are millions of people who need health insurance. They know people are dying because they don't have proper insurance. They know there are millions of people not seeing a doctor getting preventative care because they don't have insurance. They know all that. And they know the cost of health care is going to keep going higher and higher and higher until almost nobody's going to be able to afford it except the elite. And, of course, they'll all get that health care themselves in the United States Senate. They know all that. However, that's not what this is about. They couldn't be so stupid not to recognize the facts I just mentioned. This is about politics and the idea that these people would vote down something this important to the people of the United States for political reasons, for political gain, to hold on to their precious seats in the Senate and in the House of Representatives to get money from the money-grubbing damn insurance companies is ludicrous. It's obscene is what it is. And yet that is at the bottom line of this whole thing. That is the bottom of the line of this whole thing. It is about money. It's about the health care companies, the huge health care providers and insurers, making fortunes, their CEOs making fortune, averaging something like $14 million apiece. It's about them making fortunes so that they can give more money to the politicians so that they can keep their goddamn jobs. That's what this is about. It's not about the moral thing to do. It's not about the right thing to do. It's about dirty, filthy money. There isn't a single one of them that could deny that in their deep in their hearts. Not a one. And that's what makes it so sickening. Tell me that there's not a single United States senator on this Republican side of the aisle that doesn't think health care for everybody would be a good idea. Tell me that all of them, in unison, every single one of them, is unalterably opposed to health care for the masses of people in this country. Tell me that that's the truth. You know it is not. But they will follow the party line. And they will follow the company line of the insurance companies and the big health care provider because that's where the money is. Doesn't it just make you want to weep? So that they can someday get out of their jobs and get a nice, cushy lobbying job, as so many of them have in the past. People like Billy Towson gets out of Congress and makes millions for the drug companies. Is that right? Is that something that should really, really happen here in the United States? Is that something we should allow? It's our fault for allowing it. Why? Why can't we rise up in righteous indignation, all this, millions of us at once, march on that town and tell them what's what? Why can't we do that? Why don't we do that? Are we that laid back? Are we that apathetic that we just now all feel that, well, there's nothing I can do about it. Is that how it is? You're telling me that if all the people that don't have health insurance could march on Washington when they're in session, that wouldn't make it an impact? Of course it would. And yet we as citizens of this country don't have the gumption to get off our asses and go do that. Why? I don't know. I'll go. Will you? Will the millions that don't have insurance get together and march on Washington and force them to do what it is that they should do in the first place? Our government is rife with corruption. Filthy corruption for money. Look at the Jack Abramoff thing that just took place. And that barely, they barely scratched the surface of that debacle. Barely scratched the surface. Here we have Tom DeLay still out running around free on that, and always will. Many other people involved in that. Grover Norquist involved in that. And yet he's still the fair-haired boy on the right of cutting taxes. One would think the media would rise up and say something. That they would be blaring away every night on the nightly newscast or in opinion pieces. Bob and I were discussing the other day, we're not commentators. We're not journalists. We're opinion broadcasters. We bring you our opinions, and we put forth the opinions, your opinions, the opinions of the people. And it just seems like those inside the Beltway are almost impervious to what it is we want and what we need. I know we all want pie in the sky. I know that. We all want more than we can have, and I understand that. But don't tell me that we can spend hundreds of billions of dollars, $1 trillion on a war, and America all went out and bought little flags and put little ribbons on the backs of their cars supporting that war, and all the money and all the blood and treasure that went for it, and yet we can't have health care? What is wrong with the American people? I don't like to lecture on this day after day, but I'm speaking from my heart. What is wrong with the American people? How can it be? A man says we're going to go attack a little country that couldn't even defend itself, Iraq, for reasons that were a complete lie, and we knew it was. We knew it. We said so at the time, and we've been proven to be right on all sides of the coin of that issue. A man can get up and say, oh yeah, we're going to go to war. And the country, yes, let's go to war. Let's spend a fortune doing it. Let's go into Afghanistan. Let's put more troops. Let's do this. Let's do that in Iraq and around. Let's bomb the whole goddamn Middle East. That's what they were saying. We'll spend whatever amount of money it takes to do that. Whatever it costs, let's do it. And yet we want to spend money for health care, and that's not okay? What is wrong with this country? Why are we not thinking straight? Why can't those of us who are so passionate about this issue get through to others? Why can't we convince the masses that we are right on this issue? Because we don't have a big enough bullhorn, that's why. If we had 24/7 on the airwaves like the right did, we could get our message out. If we had enough support from people to expand this network, we could get our message out. But it's not happening. It's not happening because people don't care enough. this little network that could, the Head On Radio Network. We've been around longer than any liberal network in the United States. And let me tell you something. This little network that could is ready, willing, and able to put out the message that every American needs to hear. But we cannot do it without the support that we need. Why can't we get that message through to people? Why? I'm asking a rhetorical question because you don't know how frustrating it is to know that there's a job that we can do. We know we can do it. And yet we just don't have the tools in our hands that we need to do it. I don't know. Well, coming up in the next hour, we're going to have Dr. Howard Dean with us. I think coming up at the bottom of the next hour. I hope you all look forward to hearing him. I greatly respect the man. I've interviewed him many times at seminars and conventions and so forth and sat at round tables with him. A delightful man, he and his brother Jim. And doing a good job with the DFA out there preaching the message on health care every single day, all day, is Dr. Dean. And he's going to take a few minutes out of his day to be with us coming up in just, around a half hour. So do stick around for that. All right? We'll be back.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham.
As labor and the nation mourns the passing of Senator Ted Kennedy, AFL-CIO President John Sweeney says that Kennedy was our senator, a senator for working people, poor people, the old and the vulnerable. Sweeney says Senator Kennedy has left an enormous footprint on America, and for nearly half a century was the chief standard bearer for working families in the U.S. Senate. At the AFL-CIO's 2005 convention, Senator Kennedy said unions give voice to workers struggling for fairness and dignity in the workplace. And whenever there's progress on social and economic justice, he said, labor is at the heart of the battle. The AFL-CIO says it is because of Kennedy's 47 years of hard work and public service that we will pass affordable quality health care this year. In an effort to cut expenses, the U.S. Postal Service is asking workers to resign or retire. Jesse reports.
In an effort to cut costs, the United States Postal Service is seeking to buy out as many as 30,000 employees. The offer is being made mostly to workers at mail processing facilities after an incentive package was drafted following negotiations with unions representing the workers. Those that take the incentive will receive $10,000 in the first fiscal quarter of 2010 and $5,000 in the first fiscal quarter of 2011. The Postal Service is seeking ways to slash $6 billion in expenses, and the incentive package could save an estimated $500 million. Letter carriers aren't included in the incentive package, because even though mail volume has dropped 14.3% in the last year, the number of addresses in the United States increases by 1.5 million every year.
The California Nurses Association says a disturbing number of America's healthcare facilities are not prepared for the H1N1 swine flu pandemic that could hit hard in the fall. Surveying 190 hospitals coast to coast, the Nurses Union says serious problems exist from not properly isolating swine flu patients to healthcare workers not having access to proper masks. California Nurses Association leaders will testify Thursday at California's state capitol about preparedness for a swine flu pandemic that could send nearly 2 million Americans to hospitals while killing 90,000 people. The third largest refinery in the Caribbean will be shuttered indefinitely. Valero Energy Corporation said it made the decision due to the economic situation, and the 1,000 contract workers there have been laid off. The plant is the largest employer on the island of Aruba, and the plant workers represent 3.9% of its workforce.
Here is today's economic report. A study released earlier this year discovered that 70% of workers who use the Internet for leisure browsing while at work are 9% more productive than workers who say they don't. According to Dr. Brent Coker, employees who engage in what he calls workplace Internet leisure browsing have increased concentration after taking such a break. He said short and unobtrusive breaks enable the mind to rest itself.
Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
If you're one of those people yelling at town hall meetings, I hate to break it to you, but you're a patsy. You may think you're trying to save America from the government, but you're really being used by the health insurance industry, who's using the government to keep their very profitable monopoly. The health insurance industry doesn't care about competition or freedom or patients' rights or you, for that matter. Stop yelling. Start thinking. This message created by Lee Stranahan. I'm an uninsured father taking on the health insurance industry.
Country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We see that the motorcade on our TV monitor here in the studio is now reaching Boston. The streets lined almost the entire route from Hyannisport with tens of thousands of people honoring the memory of Senator Edward M. Kennedy, a fitting response for a man who's been in the United States Senate for 46 years and done so much for so many. What was the saying Winston Churchill made? I think it's fitting. Back during the Second World War, he was talking about the RAF. Never have so few done so much for so many. I don't think never has one man done so much for so many in the United States Senate as Senator Edward M. Kennedy. And we honor his memory today, along with millions and millions of other Americans. And that will take place all day today and tomorrow, with burial on Saturday, as I understand it, at Arlington National Cemetery, very close proximity to that of his brothers. You know, the propagandists are out there right now, and I do want to remind everybody, Dr. Howard Dean's going to be with us at the bottom of this hour. Good Lord willing, the creek don't rise and all that, and cell phones working and all. Last Wednesday, well, not last Wednesday, but they had those tea parties on a Wednesday, and they had, what, hundreds of them, maybe thousands of them all across the country. And they like to misrepresent them as having far more people at them than there really was. I know here in Fort Myers, the numbers that they put in paper and in the paper was exaggerated tenfold. And so I've got a proposal for all these people that these teabaggers, and I love that name, the teabaggers. And you know why. But these teabaggers, I say let them have their way. And I thought a lot about it. I say let them have their way. They're supposed to have another one coming up here sometime soon. Grover Norquist of the Americans for Tax Reform says he wants to drown government in a bathtub. I say let him do it. He wants to get rid of government services, evidently. He's often asked, what gives the government the right to seize our property through taxation? And Bob Dole, remember when he ran, it's your money. And Junior Bush and his daddy, who's better qualified to spend your money, you or the government? Hey, look, nobody likes to pay taxes. But for that matter, I don't know anybody that loves to pay their utility bills or their car payments or their house payments. But you know, if you don't make those payments, you're going to get thrown out of your house. They're going to come and repossess your car. Your power company will pull the plug on your electricity. And rightly so. So here's what I want to tell all these teabaggers. If you're that much against paying taxes, if you think we're overtaxed and we just shouldn't pay taxes, we'll just make all the tax payments voluntary. How about that? I'm serious now. If you think paying taxes is that bad, then we're going to let you out. We're going to excuse you from paying the taxes. Do you like that idea, all you teabaggers? I say let's let them do it. Now, I just have one caveat here, or two, or three, in this whole thing. First of all, if you're a teabagger and you're so much against the taxes, and you don't want health care, and you don't want to pay the taxes on it and all that, we're gonna let you opt out of the taxes. But if you do that, if someone breaks in your house, steals everything you own, kills a couple of your kids, and ties you up and shoots you too, you can't call the cops. Okay? Because they're paid with tax money, you see. And since you don't pay any tax money, you don't want to pay more tax money, then you can't call the cops. And if your house catches on fire, and it's likely going to burn down, don't call the fire department. No. If you don't think you need to pay taxes, don't call the fire department, because you know that's taxpayers' money too. And don't send your kids down to the local library. You can't do that, because see, we all chipped in to buy those books as well. And don't go to court over anything. If your neighbor does something terribly egregious and you want to sue him, you can't do it. Why? Because the bailiffs and the court reporters and the judges and all that, they're all on public pay, the payroll that we all chipped in to pay for, you see. Of course, you won't be able to hire any people that were educated in public schools or universities. And you won't be able to use your computers because of the microcircuitry developed by NASA. And you won't be able to purchase prescription drugs because they're certified safe and effective by the FDA. So you're going to want to get out of that as well. Eat meat at your own peril, because that's inspected by the Department of Agriculture. And no, you can't go to any of our national parks or our national forest, because we all chip in and pay for that as well. And if you've got a bunch of money, and a lot of you right-wingers do, it's not going to be covered by the Federal Deposit Insurance, the FDIC, anymore, because you don't want your taxes increased to pay for any of these things. And if you want to get right down to the nitty-gritty of it, you can't even use the United States currency, because it's guaranteed by the federal government. Said you're going to have to do bartering for everything. And that's just a tiny little bit of what all you teabaggers are against, evidently. Never have I seen a bigger group of idiots. And I'll just tell it like it is. I don't candy coat anything, as you know. These people are idiots. These teabaggers. They're just kidding themselves. I don't know why you'd want to kid yourself like this. Of course, we won't be able to keep all these tax protesters from getting all these government services. They're going to be getting a free lunch in some of these ways. The air that they breathe will be cleaner due to the enforcement of clean air standards paid for by the rest of us. And, of course, we all chip in and pay for the military, so they'll accidentally get protected by the military. Just kind of, if you think about it, kind of changes the whole thing about these teabaggers, doesn't it? All these things that are purchased by tax revenues, all of us chipping in together, paying our taxes. You know, they complain that much of their tax assessments lost to waste and fraud and abuse. That isn't a right-wing issue. That's something for all of us. But what is wrong with people like Grover Norquist and his followers and these teabaggers that think we need to abolish taxes? And all the things I just mentioned would have no way of being supported, the police and the fire and the roads and the meat inspectors and our airplanes and all that thing. Yeah, we can root out fraud and abuse and all that. I didn't hear any of them complaining about Dick Cheney and his buddies over at Halliburton. Just happened to lose a few billion dollars of, and I mean lose, cash money in Iraq. Well, I think some of this that I've just mentioned shows you how frivolous and stupid that argument is, these teabaggers. We also know that many of these people that complain about taxes don't even pay taxes, you know that. Many wealthy people in this country, many people who make lots and lots of money in this country don't pay any taxes because they can afford good accountants, that's why, and use every loophole there possibly can be. And don't pay any taxes. Well, and we had people like Ronald Reagan. Saying government isn't the solution, government is the problem. Well, that turned on these people, didn't it? That turned them on. They're mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. They don't simply act angry. They certainly don't act smart. And they go out and go to these absolutely idiotic teabag things. as I live and breathe, as Grandma used to say. I still can't get over how many people in this country are absolutely stupid. I know a lot of people don't hear me, like to hear me say that. But there are a lot of people in this country that don't have the sense they were born with. They really don't. We're going to pause for a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes here if we can find out what it is we wanted to do. I think we will. We'll be back.
Rolled out this morning, the kids had the morning news show on. Brian Tumble was talking about the fighting in Lebanon. Some senator was squawking about the bad economy. It's gonna get worse, you see. Need a change in policy. There's a local paper rolled up in a rubber band. One more sad story's one more than I can stand. Just once, how I'd like to see the headline say, not much to print today, can't find nothing better to say. Because nobody robbed a liquor store. Somebody take the hostage, somebody steals a plane. How I want to hear the anchor man talk about a county fair and how we cleaned up the air, how everybody learned to care.
Back with you here on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network this afternoon. Kind of a melancholy day, as we've mentioned before. We are, in just a few minutes, going to have Dr. Dean, Howard Dean, on the program to talk about the health care issues. And we are very much looking forward to that today. Always a good guy to talk about, talk to. He's such a gentleman, so engaging, always happy to talk to you. You know, he's just heck of a guy, and I know he's not listening right now, so I'm sure he isn't. In fact, I think he's on the road right now, so I'll just go ahead and say some things about him. He is, he's a very, very, very gregarious guy, and I greatly admire him. I was so proud of the job he did, and absolutely, positively, Barack Obama can thank Howard Dean, because he's president of the United States right now. Without the 50-state program initiated by Dr. Howard Dean, Barack Obama wouldn't be president right now. The man had the foresight to go ahead and make sure that we fought it out in a lot of the states that we needed to make some gains in, and we did, and we took some states that ordinarily we wouldn't because of that 50-state program. So good thing with good thing we had Howard Dean as the chairman. I see the motorcade now is in Boston, and they're on their way to the Kennedy Library. There are thousands and thousands of people lining the streets of Boston. A much beloved man in Boston is Senator Edward M. Kennedy, much beloved. And the Kennedy history goes back so far. I believe his grandfather, Honey Fitz, was the mayor of Boston. And, you know, his mother's history, his father's history, rich with Kennedy history in that town. And I'm sure, although nobody's broached the subject that I've seen in the last day or two, I'm sure there are a lot of people in Ireland right now that are very sad as well. The Kennedys, much loved in Ireland. Certainly John was, and Bobby was, and Ted was as well. To have one of their own, one of their Irish folks be so well represented and enjoy such respect here in the United States of America. People crying, openly crying with tears in their eyes. People holding signs, openly weeping as the motorcade goes by. Well, we have to live through these times, don't we? Let's talk about some of the myths about health care that are going on around the world right now. You know, the right-wingers are doing everything they can to talk about health care around the world, and most of it's propaganda. It's all socialized medicine out there. It's really not so. The Washington Post today came out with an article. Well, it wasn't today. I think it was Sunday's. It's not socialized medicine. Some countries such as Britain, New Zealand, and Cuba do provide health care in government hospitals with the government paying the bills. And others, for example, Canada and Taiwan, rely on private sector providers paid for by the government-run insurance. But a lot of the wealthy countries, including Germany and the Netherlands and Japan and Switzerland, provide universal coverage using private doctors, private hospitals, and private insurance plans. And in a lot of ways, healthcare is less socialized overseas than it is here in the United States. Almost all Americans sign up for government insurance, Medicare, at age 65. And in Germany and Switzerland and the Netherlands, seniors stick with private insurance plans for life. And the U.S. Department of the VA is one of the planet's purest examples of government-run health care. So it's not all socialized medicine out there. And, of course, they bring up their pet talking point is that it's rationed and you got to wait through long lines, and the answer to that is usually no. Germans can sign up for any of the nation's 200 private health insurance plans, 200, and that's a broader choice than any American has. And if a German doesn't like his or her insurance company, they can switch to another with no increase in premium. And the Swiss, they can choose any insurance plan in the country. And in France and in Japan, you don't get a choice of an insurance provider. You have to use one designated for your company or your industry. But patients can go to any doctor, any hospital, any traditional healer. There is no U.S.-style limits such as in-network list or of doctors or pre-authorization for surgery. You pick any doctor, you get treatment, and insurance has to pay. So don't be telling us how our system is better. That's ridiculous. Canadians have their choice of providers. And in Austria and Germany, if a doctor diagnoses a person as stressed, medical insurance pays for weekends at a health spa. And as for those notorious waiting lists that we always hear about, there are some countries are plagued by them. Canada make patients wait weeks or months for non-emergency, and I want to stress non-emergency care, as a way to keep their costs down. But studies by the Commonwealth Fund and others report
that many nations, Germany, Britain, Austria, outperform the United States on measures such as waiting times for appointments and for elective surgeries. And we gave you the story the other day of the Canadian that had to wait 7 months for surgery to have a lung removed. But if it had become life-threatening at any point during that 7 months, they would have been taken in the same day. In Japan, waiting times are so short that most patients don't bother to make an appointment. And, of course, they make the argument that foreign health care systems are inefficient and they're bloated bureaucracies and all that. Well, the other countries just don't bear that out. The best at controlling medical costs is Japan. Japan spends about $3,400 a year annually on health care per person. The United States spends $7,000. Who's healthier, the Japanese or us? And, of course, another big myth is that health insurance has to be cruel. It does not. American health insurance companies, as a matter of routine, reject applicants with what they like to call, you know, the famous line, pre-existing conditions. Precisely the people most likely to need the insurance services. And they've got literally armies of adjusters to deny claims. If they can deny a claim, they will do it. And the other countries mentioned, they've got to accept all applicants. They can't cancel as long as you pay your premium. So there aren't people out there trying to, what's the word, rescission? Trying to do rescission. In other words, get you, when they find out they might have to pay a buck, get you off their rolls as your health provider. They have people working at our health insurance companies to get you off the rolls if they suspect that you may cost them money. That's just how it is. Hello, you're on the Guy James Show. Don't know what happened to that one. You're hearing that annoying dial tone there? 866-546-5254. They're probably trying this again right now. I hope we're not having any technical difficulties right now. I don't think we are. Our phone seems to be working fine. Anyway, we are waiting right now, anytime during the next few minutes for Dr. Dean to call. And, we'll patiently wait here. But these myths that have been floated around by the right, they don't have any merit. I talked to a lovely Canadian couple the other day, how satisfied they are with their health care. You're on the Guy James Show. Got our phone just absolutely working backwards here. Ringy-dingies.
Hi, you've reached John McCary. Please leave me a message. If this is during normal business hours, you can reach me at 571-230.
I know the Dean campaign. I'm going to put on a tune here just for a minute, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, okay? Don't go away. James Show.
Oh, hey, this is Christina with Howard Dean's office.
Hi, Christina.
And I think we're doing an interview with Governor Dean right now?
Yes.
Okay, hold on just a second. Let me get him on the
All
phone real
right.
quick, okay?
Thank you, Christina. And how's that for some cool phone music? We're waiting on Governor Howard Dean. Come on the line. Never heard any waiting music quite like that.
Everyone there?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, Dr. Dean.
Hi. Yes, how are you?
Welcome to the Guy James Show. It's a pleasure to have you on with us today.
Happy to be on.
I understand you're hip-hopping all over the country. I've seen you everywhere lately, talking on behalf of the health care problem that we've got right now, and I think we last saw you at the Netroots Nation convention and many different panels and so forth. You're a busy guy.
I am, but it's worth it. We really need change in this country, and we elected change we can believe in, and now we got to make sure we believe in it.
Where are we on the health care plan right now? Do you think we're making progress? Are the blue dogs holding
us
back?
We're making a lot of progress. It's been a tough August. I think we've withstood the storm, and I think the Republicans have made their intentions clear, and the sailing is straight ahead. We've got to pass a bill. We've got it through four out of the five committees. The Finance Committee is now going to take it out of a bill that's not going to have any Republican support, and we've got to go pass the bill and get it to the President's desk, and I think that bill is going to include a public option because the majority of the people voting on the bill are going to want that.
If we hear Democrats that are against it, do you think we'll be able to break a filibuster if the Republicans resort to that, and they probably will?
I don't think. No, we definitely can't do that. Even if all the Democrats were for it, we couldn't do it because now Senator Kennedy has passed, and we don't have enough votes. So you know, if the Republicans filibuster, it'll just end up in reconciliation, which is where it should have ended up in the first place.
Well, can't we get an interim appointment very, very soon, do you think, in Massachusetts?
I don't know. They have to change the law in order to do that, and of course those things happen, but certainly not, I think it would be surprising to do it in the next 30 days, but you never know in politics.
Do you think we're looking at several months yet before we get this done, or this, the sooner rather than later?
Well, my prediction is the president's going to sign in December, and that will give us enough time to, I hope, start putting some of it into effect as soon as possible, because, you know, there are people without insurance, and there are people who are losing their insurance every day.
We're hearing numbers like 14,000 a day losing health care. Is that a realistic number?
Well, it is. I mean, it's tied to the unemployment number. You know, if your unemployment number goes up 120,000 people, that's 120,000 people that probably don't have health insurance.
What kind of a public option are you advocating for this? What would you?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've thought about this a lot, and this is not in any of the bills. But I think the best thing to do is just tie it to Medicare. Let people under 65 that is sign up for Medicare if they want to. You have to make some adjustments in Medicare. But the only way to get this thing operating as soon as possible, and I think it's important to get it operating as soon as possible, is to use a system that we already have. So I would simply use it. Simply allow people who wish to have public health insurance to sign up for Medicare. The advantage is it can't be taken away for any reasons. You can't be turned down for any reasons. They don't charge sick people more than healthy people. It stays with you if you move, if you lose your job, you still have it. But there'll be a lot of people who want to keep their private insurance, and I think that's fine, and let them do that. But we need something that's going to be up and running sooner rather than later, and the easiest way to do that is to say, okay, 60 people under 65 can sign up for Medicare, and then you can expand that later on, but certain people ought to be able to sign up right away.
But, Governor, we don't want the government to get involved in our Medicare, you know.
Yes, well, you know, I was at a town meeting the other day, and somebody said how terrible Medicare was, and I said, okay, how many people in this room? I would say it was about 60% in favor of the president's plan and about 40% against. I said, how many people in this room would like to give up their Medicare? About 15 people raised their hand. So, this is nonsense. These meetings are not about health care. They're about venting because, you know, folks didn't win the election. And I think that's fair in a democratic process, but let's not pretend this meeting is about health care.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And probably the 15 people that held their hands up were either crazy or just being stubborn because nobody wants to give up their Medicare. I've not talked to a single soul. And the idea that, Medicare seems to me to be run not perfect, but I can't think of a better example around the world.
No, it's not, but it's more efficient than anything else. It's pretty efficient.
It's at least as efficient as most of the government programs around the world. We were talking earlier about Austria and Germany and Australia and our neighbors to the north. Our Medicare is as good or better run than any of their government health care. Not that they're not run well in their countries, because many of them are.
Yeah, and they do have problems. Any big bureaucracy is going to have its problems, but, you know, frankly, one of the cries on the right that they gave up after a while because this wasn't true was you're going to have a government bureaucrat between you and your doctor. Well, we already have insurance bureaucrats between us and our doctor, and we don't want government bureaucrats between us and our doctor, and we don't have them. I never had anybody when I was practicing medicine from Medicare tell me how I should treat a patient, but I had a lot of people from the private insurance people calling up me up and telling them I couldn't do this and I couldn't do that, and they wouldn't reimburse the patient for this and that.
Well, you should know. Dr. Dean, I want to thank you so much. I know you're pressed for time, and I want to thank you for coming on the program today, and I want to thank you for the tremendous battle you're waging right now. And I know you've had your nose to the grindstone day and night on this for several months, and those of us out here that are hoping to get a good health care plan, we appreciate your efforts. And I was just speaking a minute ago, I certainly appreciate your efforts when you're chairman of the party, too, or we wouldn't have the conditions we have right now, that having the majorities that we hold, and we wouldn't have the White House either if it weren't for your 50-state plan. And
well, you're very nice to say that, and I appreciate it. And that's hopefully by December, this will all be worth it.
Well, we hope so. And thank you for taking time out of your busy day to be on the Guy James Show. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Howard Dean, everybody, the DFA, Democracy for America, a great organization. Do you know they only have 14 employees? that shocked me. Jim told me, Jim Dean, Dr. Dean's brother, told me that a while back, and I was shocked when he said that, because that organization gets a lot of traction. They get a lot of attention. And to have only 14 full-time staffers on there, I thought it was just amazing for all that they get done. And they do get a lot done. They really do. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to call in and join us here on the program. I'd like to hear from some of you, if you would, please. Give us a call and let us know your feelings about the death of Senator Kennedy. If you've got any stories to tell about Senator Kennedy, anecdotal stories of have you met the senator? I had the fortune, the good fortune, to meet him a couple of times, and he always had his dog with him, the Portuguese water dogs, and it was just always a pleasure see him, an engaging man. He would stop and talk to anybody. He'd sit in a room and discuss a serious issue with you as long as you wanted to. He always, there's a picture of he and I on the chat room. I'm so proud to have had that picture. We just had finished a discussion. We were sitting at a round table discussion with several liberal broadcasters. And we had just walked out of the room. And this picture, if you could see it a little closer, it's been cropped a little bit. He had in his left hand down there the leash to his dog, his Portuguese water dog. And he gave a pup to the Obamas. They have a Portuguese water dog now, and Teddy Kennedy is the one who gave it to him. He loved his dogs. They were with him all the time. I don't know if all the other senators in the office buildings allowed to have their dogs with him or not, but what are you going to say to Ted Kennedy if he wanted his dog with him? I particularly enjoyed a story I heard last night of somebody that's a good friend of his talking about how people would wilt on the phone. Not that he'd get angry with them and yell at them or anything like that. But he would call a constituent would have a problem, for example, a medical problem. I heard about one woman that had trouble with a prosthesis. I can't say that word. Why can't I say that word? Prosthesis. And she had trouble with it, getting things done through her medical care and all that. And said it took one call from Ted Kennedy, and on the other, and he was very nice, very pleasant. But on the other end of the line, it was, yes, sir, Senator Kennedy, no, sir, Senator Kennedy, yes, sir, we will get it done right away. And he had a way of being able to do that. And he had a way of being able to reach across the aisle, even to people that some of us on the left consider mortal political enemies, he could work with them. And that's something that's gone, you know. I don't know of anybody else that does that. I know it's a club of 100 guys who think they ought to be president, but there are people in there who are enemies. There isn't any question about it. And yet he could always bridge the gap somehow and talk to just about anybody. He worked with Reagan, he worked with Daddy Bush, he worked with Junior Bush. He was able to use his clout and use his personality and his talents of persuasion to get a lot of things done, and people like that are very rare. I am not like that. I'm not a compromiser. It's my way or no way usually, and that is so it wouldn't work for me to try and do that. That picture was taken a few years ago. I think about 5 years ago, if I had to guess. They're asking on the chat room. I want to say hello to all of you on Democratic Underground that are listening to the program today. We put a little blurb up there that Dr. Dean was going to be on. I knew we wouldn't be able to have him on for very long, and it was told earlier today that it would be quite brief, but good to have him with us nonetheless. I do appreciate his efforts more than I can say. 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. If you'd like to join us here on the program. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Don't go away.
century. I want to be just like my president. I want to make more money than I can spend. I want to build more bombs than I can send. Somewhere I can even spell the name of. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across the sky. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Come on, you black and Hispanic boys, we'll keep you poor so you've got no choice but to join the army in your front and fight for Uncle Sam and die. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century.
Welcome back to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We've got about 12 minutes left in the program. I'd love it if you would call and give us... if you have any stories or how you felt about Ted Kennedy and his passing, if you'd like, we'd enjoy having that, I assure you. We had something here today from, here we go, let's do this.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Several media figures have falsely claimed that Democratic health insurance reform proposals would cut physician Medicare reimbursements and lead to denial of care.
Less doctors will want to take Medicare recipients. Less hospitals will welcome them. It's going to mean denial of coverage. That's exactly what a reimbursement does.
In fact, according to the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office, the bill would actually increase projected Medicare spending for doctors by $245 billion. But today's most outrageous comment goes to Rush Limbaugh, remembering Ted Kennedy in the context of health care reform.
Ted Kennedy didn't have to read a death book. Ted Kennedy wasn't asked to say, is my life worth living?
It would be hypocritical as it could be to put his name on a health care bill that forces things on people that he was not forcing on himself. It would be an insult to his memory.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Rush, why don't you take that death book argument of yours and put it where the sun doesn't shine? Only a fool... only a complete fool would believe that. That is what you think of your audience, isn't it, Rush Limbaugh? You think they're fools. In fact, you know they're fools because they've accepted your propaganda for 20-some years now, and they continue to hang on every word you say. To say that Ted Kennedy didn't have to use the death book that he wanted to put on, that's absolutely ludicrous, and only a complete idiot would accept that. This propaganda that you put out, it enrages me. It really does. I shouldn't let it get to me, but when you have a man talk about complete idiocy, this death book idea that they're going to come knocking on your door and tell you that you're next, the Grim Reaper's heading down the street for you, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy. They know it is, and that's the sick part about it, that you could sit on there in your studio, you and Hannity and Levin and that absolutely insane lunatic Glenn Beck and tell people, old people or people that aren't so smart, tell them that the government's going to choose who dies and who doesn't is just, well, it's unforgivable. It's unforgivable that you could do that. And anybody that would go on the air and make such statements to incite people to fear is no kind of a man at all. And, of course, we know Rush Limbaugh is no kind of a man at all. A man who a drug addict who didn't even have the courage to go out and buy his own drugs, had to send his maid out to buy them. That's what kind of a man Rush Limbaugh is. And I cannot understand, I will never understand, people knowing the cowardice of a guy named Rush Limbaugh, knowing what a goddamn coward he is, knowing that, this whole deal with him losing his hearing and all that, knowing he went through all that, bought these drugs through his maid because he didn't have the courage to go buy them himself, and then they will listen to him and believe what he has to say. Let me tell you something. If I become a drug addict and I send somebody else I know out to buy my drugs for you and I'm still on the air, turn me off. Don't ever believe another word I say. I promise you that's the case. I tell you, when I hear that guy say things like that, and especially when I hear that people are listening to him and believing what he has to say, it just shakes my faith in the American public. It just does. Well, I shouldn't, but I can't help it. Did you happen to see someone sent me a clip of Glenn Beck's end of his show yesterday? I shouldn't watch stuff like that. But the clip of the end of Glenn Beck's show yesterday was, and you'll find it on the Internet. Google it or something. You'll find it. It might be up on Media Matters. It's frightening. It's absolutely frightening. I watched that and went, oh, my God. This guy thinks that he's some kind of a deity. He does. He thinks he's another Father Coughlin or something like that. Oh, well, wanted to be sure and play this for you today.
Hey America, Insuricor is here to thank you for defeating healthcare reform and thus defeating socialism. That's why this week we're offering 5% off our basic healthcare plan. Sign up now. We also want to thank you for not stopping in healthcare and defeating other socialist programs that America has taxed your dollars to fund. In exchange for returning these socialist programs to the private sector, we're offering deals left and right. Get 10% off our basic waste management coverage. $5 copayments on regular bags of trash. $10 copayments on recycling. These prices can't be beat. Can't afford those $20,000 a year private schools? Sign up now for our basic public education coverage. Where else can you get public education at a copayment of $999 a month? Only at Insuricor. Feeling unsafe in your home or on the streets? Sign up for our basic law enforcement coverage. Our system can't be beat. When a crime has been committed against you, simply fill out a claim at the scene and hand it to the police when they show up. With Insuricor, you'll have to wait only 25 minutes to receive a ruling on your claim and send the police after the perpetrator. That's 5 minutes faster than our average competitors wait. Remember, that extra 5 minutes will likely decide whether the police catch that mugger. And don't be caught without our basic fire department coverage.
Help! My house is burning down!
Sorry, ma'am. Your fire department coverage policy doesn't cover burning houses.
Are you kidding? I specifically requested burning house coverage. I've been paying it for years. Why is it canceled now?
Probably because your house is burning down. Here's the bill for calling us out here. Have a nice day.
Uh-oh, sounds like she was using one of our competitors. She should have signed up with Insuricor. So call now. Sign up for one or more of our plans and celebrate the defeat of socialism. Remember, it's always best to entrust programs that serve the public good to unregulated, profit-driven mega corporations. Insuricor.
Boy, I got to get some stock in that company, don't you? And what comes right after that? We're all going to wear our uniforms. We're all going to wear those gray uniforms and the leather boots, and like we saw in the old movies. What was the name of that? Soylent Green. Soylent Green. I'm going to have to watch that movie again soon. I think I need to rent that and see it again soon. That's what they're talking about now. The body of Edward M. Kennedy has arrived at the JFK Library. A man who carried the torch for a long time. It was passed from his brother to his middle brother to him. And he carried it. And he carried it well. As we've mentioned, and I won't get to talk to you again until next week, and the ceremony and burial will go by this weekend. Here's a man who was very human. He's a man who suffered with problems in his life, medical problems, personal problems, family problems. He was born with in wealth and privilege. He could have sat back and been a bum his entire life. Many people of his station do. But his mother, Rose, taught him and put deep into his heart the idea that to those who much is given, much is expected. And he gave back and gave back and gave back his entire life. And the nation is better for it. There is no question the nation is better for it. He's a man that could have sat by and gone to the United States Senate and done like some of them done. You never hear from them. They don't sponsor any bills. They don't really get impassioned about anything. They just keep their office. But Ted Kennedy was never satisfied with doing that. He was only satisfied by getting legislation passed that helped his fellow man, that helped the disadvantaged, to help the poor, to help the working man, to help those with health problems. And we owe this to ourselves. We owe this in memory of Edward M. Kennedy to get this health care bill passed. I hope it comes to fruition. I hope it does. Thank you so much for listening today. You've been listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Very proud to have been with you today. And we'll be back again next week. Just want to end this program by saying our prayers go out to the Kennedy family. It's a terrible time for them, but there'll be a brighter day. God bless Ted Kennedy.